Hello, and welcome back to We Are the Weirdest, Mister, the podcast for all things cult, camp, queer, and creepy. I'm your host, Hillary Michelle Post, and I'm joined today by my sister, Lace Mason, and my brother-in-law, Sam Mason. Thanks for joining us again, Sam.
Oh, you're welcome.
Fuck me, I guess. Hi.
Well, thank you, too, Lacey. I am 2 weeks out from having COVID, so if my voice is scratchy and I cough a lot, I really apologize. I'll try to have the forethought to mute my microphone anytime I go into a coughing fit, but I can't promise it will happen. So the film we're talking about today has been on our to-do list for a long time. Not only is it one of our favorite movies, but I've even received requests from listeners to talk about this one. But it has fallen in the curse of the podcast where, like, every time I go to do it, either something comes up or gets taken off of streaming and I need to watch it again. And it's just, it finally got back on streaming. So I grabbed hold with my talons. Like, we're doing it this time before it disappears again. Today we're going to be talking about the 1985 comedy Clue. Now, I know it's unlikely you'll remember, but do you either of you recall the first time you saw Clue?
Not at all.
Oh, I do. He made me watch it.
Oh, really?
Yeah. He was like, have you ever seen this? I was like, no. And I really had no interest in it, like, at all, but Tim Curry. So I was like, okay.
That's funny. Yeah, I was very young when I first saw it. I think I rented it from the library because I was and still am super in love with Tim Curry, and I would go on tears where I'd just, like, pick an actor or actress and rent everything that they were in, and I was very young. I was in love with Tim Curry from, like, Muppet Treasure Island, and I was like, I want everything with Tim Curry in it, which is why I'm the fucked up person I am today.
No, everybody who has a crush on Tim Curry, it comes from a really weird place.
I mean,
think about it.
Yeah, it's either something super wholesome like Muppet Treasure Island or something as twisted as Legend or something as really age-inappropriate like Rocky Horror. Like, you just...
I would say, honestly, as far as the feedback, because I've asked, Legend is more so than any of it. And I honestly figured Frankenfurter would be top because he looks really good in those tights, but... Nope, everybody's like, Legend. And I'm like, okay, I prefer the pirate, but okay.
We're a bunch of monster fuckers, what can I say? I mean, and I think something that has slept on that is probably an untapped memory for a lot of people is him as the villain in Ferngully, too.
Yeah. Fucking,
like, evil smoke monster, but he was, like, still weirdly sexy. It was very strange. That really erotic villain song. I mean.
Yeah.
Shit, I'm gonna have to do that.
I forgot all about that. I think I have that on DVD.
I think I do too. We should do it for the podcast.
Yeah.
So Clue, of course, is inspired by the Parker Brothers board game. Do you guys like the board game?
Oh yeah.
I'm very competitive. Mm. And every time I've ever played it was me, it was like me and Greg's game. And he would win, like, I don't know how he cheated, but like we would get everything set up, and 15 seconds in, he would win every friggin' time. And I would just, like, flip the board and throw shit across the room. And... but
I was good at it,
but I liked it.
Yeah. Yeah, having grown up with you, I believe that entirely. I remember us throwing shit at each other all the time.
You never went mini golfing with the Post, did you?
No.
Me and Uncle Bobby, like, throwing putters at each other. He gets pissed off. I remember I beat him at Putt-Putt. I was 12, and he was so fucking mad, like, throwing his putter into the water and shit. Go on, damn it, cheating motherfuckers. Yeah, it's a trip to go on an outing with the Post and try to do anything competitive whatsoever. That's why we don't.
That's so funny. Yeah, I don't really like board games in general. Like, I can count on, like, my one hand the number of board games I like. Clue is fine. I mean, for a board game, it's better than, like, 12 years playing Monopoly or something.
Oh, see, we're those people. We'll play the same game of Monopoly for a week.
I can't do it, man. I feel so bad. Like, I told you guys this already, but Julie and Heather try to get me into Catan because they both love it. And it's just like primitive Monopoly. It's the exact the same as Monopoly, just like primitive. I'm like, nope, can't do it. Sorry. I played one time. I'm like, oh, I fit my quota as your friend. Never again. They're like that same day. They're like, do you want to play again so we can play with Bruce? I'm like, nope, sure don't. Y'all have fun though.
It's just really hard to tell. Like, people playing with me probably think I'm not having a good time. But, like, the more agitated I am means that I am. Like, I'm into it.
I just pictured that that sketch, that a Mama's Family sketch from Carol Burnett where they're playing Sorry. Do you remember that?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Sorry, just screaming at each other. Like, that's
remember, like, family aggravation games?
I loved aggravation. That was
that's still my favorite. Yeah, and now we live, like, in the slanty shanty, and I, like, try to put the marbles on the table, and, like, somebody stands up and hits it with the knee, and everything just fucking goes flying. Oh, no! Where were my balls?
Oh, my God. That's hilarious.
That's the first useless piece of trivia I have. What? The board game Clue. In the movie, the floors match the board game.
Oh, yeah. Spot on. Like, they were really good about the layout of the whole house and stuff. Like, I think they made a conscious effort to make the costumes be, like, opposite ends of the color spectrum, so it wasn't too on the nose. But everyone's cars are the same color as their game pieces. Mm-hmm. Like, they have a bunch of little details like that that are really spot on to the game. Have you guys seen the recent, like, the version they released this year of Clue?
Uh-uh.
When you get a chance, you got to Google it, because they made everyone super hot. Like, if you look at the cover of the game, it's just like, I think Mrs. White is a gender nonconforming chef, and she has like an under a side part and like an undercut, and she's all hot and butch, and I'm just like, yeah, this is awesome. Like, it's really modernized, and everyone's weirdly fine for some reason.
I will go as far as to say that most of the people in this movie are at their most attractive.
That's fair. I'd say that.
Yeah.
Cause like, we haven't really gotten into, I guess we can wait, but like, we've got Christopher Lloyd. And he's like a sexual guy. Like, he's like a ladies' man. It's like, really? But you almost buy it. Like, he's kind of normal looking in that movie.
Yeah, kind of normal looking. Aw, Christopher
Lloyd. Well, I don't know. He just, it's not the way he looks. It's the way that he acts. Yeah. And this is a movie of a good example of how, you know, normal of a guy he could be when he's not trying to be funny.
Yeah, that's a good point. So a little background on the movie before we get into the plot, which, okay, let's just, before we get too into the weeds. This is going to be so difficult to talk about. That's another reason why it's taken me so long to do it, because every time I sit down to think about how I'm going to, like, tackle this plot, my head hurts.
Oh, I know. That's what I was just saying. Like, how is this even going to go?
Yeah, Lacey, before re-recording, she and I were chatting, and she was like, that sounds like a you problem, so I'm not really... I was like, gee, thanks, Ness. But yeah, like, so it's very dense, and I'll try to get all the story points accurate and try to get all the great one-liners in, but it's such a dense story that if we miss something, if I miss something, please interject. If we miss something, listeners, sorry. It took me like all day yesterday to organize these notes, and they're still not great. So,
and if you haven't seen this movie, or if you've only seen it once and you didn't dig it, I recommend doing it again.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, the first time I watched it, the low-hanging fruit was the only thing that got me. Like, some of the little one-liners, I was like, huh. But the first time, I was like, this is nuts. But then, yeah. I don't know. I went back and gave it another shot, and I really liked it.
Yeah, there's a lot to that to digest. And it's so dry, too. Like, it's played so serious with such ridiculous content.
You can miss it.
Yeah. And I was reading about, I think it was Michael McKean, who before every take, he would have to, like, remind everybody, like, this is really serious. Like, because you have to. You have to play the material as serious as possible for it not to get into lunacy. So everyone was having such a good time, and Michael McKean was just like, all right, everybody, people are dying. Like, please focus up.
He looks really good in this movie. Maybe it's just my mood. I'm just like, hey, hey.
Place is just horny.
Oh, that's right. Remember, the crotches are thawing. It's spring.
Yeah, Lacey's theory. It's springtime and everyone's just in heat.
It is. You can't have, I won't even say to be a female because it's not just females, but like, you open your inbox and you can tell it's spring. People you ain't even know, like, hey, girl, you're looking good. Like,
people slide into DMs.
Yeah, like, who are you? I had one the other day, and I have assumed this man was gay. For years, he's been on my Facebook, and I'm like, oh, he ain't gay.
When has that ever stopped a man from coming onto us?
True. True. Just anyway. Having a slow day, and he's like, oh, she looks easy. Just show me the tit. No.
I mean, I'm pretty gay, and even I have, like, my handful of dudes. I'm just like, what's up? I have my core, like, five dudes that are, like, the exception to my rule. Otherwise, I'm just like, springtime, baby. Anyway.
Any crap.
Holy crap. So, Clue was written and directed by Jonathan Lynn, who also directed My Cousin Vinny and The Whole Nine Yards. Mm. He collaborated on the screenplay with John Landis, the filmmaker behind Animal House, Blues Brothers, American Werewolf in London. It's John Landis, everyone knows who that is. John claimed, Landis of the two Johns, claimed in an interview to have invited playwright Tom Stoppard, composer Stephen Sondheim, actor Anthony Perkins to all help write the screenplay. But it was ultimately just finished by Jonathan Lynn. It was produced by famed producer Deborah Hill, who produced other classics like Halloween, Escape from New York, and The Dead Zone. All in all, it was made by some true masters, and that's not even mentioning the amazing cast, which we'll get into a bit. Unfortunately, despite the incredible people involved, Clue kind of bombed at the box office. With a budget of $15 million, it only earned back $14.6
million. Oh, damn.
Yeah. However, it did go on to become a cult classic, while we're talking about it today, and it is considered a comic gem. So, the film is set in 1954 in New England. Ooh, touch my microphone, sorry. It begins with the butler Wadsworth arriving at the mansion known as Hill House, which is why is every mansion in movies called Hill House?
That's a good question.
Like, every universe has a Hill House mansion. Wadsworth is played by Tim Curry, obviously. Though originally the role was written for English actor Leonard Rossiter, who sadly passed away before filming began.
Who's that?
I don't know.
This is what we have you here for. Who the hell's that, babe?
Who?
Leonard Rossiter. He doesn't know either.
That's terrible.
Sorry, Leonard.
The second choice was Rowan Atkinson, actually. but he was deemed not famous enough by the studio.
Boo.
But, yeah, luckily we got Tim Curry. Who, by the way, cites this as one of his favorite movies he's done. So,
really?
Yeah. I read that too.
Yeah. And that's saying something because he has such an amazing catalog of movies.
I wonder where Pirates falls. Like, I was paid. That's what I'll say.
I think he had fun. I was reading about, you know, I was talking to other people that like Muppet movies. And the reason that like Muppet Treasure Island and Christmas Carol are both, like, in a lot of people's opinions, the two best Muppet movies. And that's a matter of opinion. But is because you have these actors at the center who you have Michael Caine, who is playing it so straight that he's like, I'm not working with Muppets.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then you have Tim Curry, who is basically a human Muppet. Like, they're just opposite ends of the spectrum. And you have to be that way to really play off in the universe that you're in, you know?
Yeah.
I could talk about Tim Curry for 12 hours, so sorry. Where was I? Oh, so, Wadsworth, let's see, Wadsworth arrives at the mansion at the beginning, right? And the entire house, the Hill House, is a set, except for the ballroom, which was shot on location at the mansion in Pasadena, California, which is weird that they would be like, well, this one room will go.
Yeah.
Random.
No. And after the production concluded, the mansion set was bought and redecorated by the producers of Dynasty, who used it as the Carlton Hotel on the show.
Oh.
Yeah. Wadsworth arrives and he feeds these two ferocious dogs that are chained up out front. And then steps in what we can only infer is dog shit. He scrapes it off and goes inside, but there's like a running joke through the whole intro of the movie of people like still being able to smell it.
I never even noticed that until last night.
Mm-hmm.
See, it's so dense. There's so much. He checks in with the maid Yvette, played by Colleen Camp.
Hot.
Holy very hot. Shit. She is supposedly arrived at her audition in a maid's uniform and got the job because of how amazing she looked in it. There were other, like, actual kind of big names up for Yvette, but they're all just like, Colleen's just too crazy hot. We just got...
I was, like, Googling how to find an outfit that would make my boobies look so... They're just, like, shelves. They're just... Like, resting her chin on them. I'm like, yeah.
Yeah. She could serve drinks on her chest. In fact, shout out to boobs in this movie in general.
Yeah.
There's a lot of impressive boobage going on. Between her and Leslie Ann Warren, there's a lot going on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Then Wadsworth checks in with the very intimidating cook. I think her name is Mrs. Ho. they say it one time. He comes in and is like, Mrs. Ho, blah, blah, blah. And then the guests begin to arrive. So in the order of their arrival, we have Colonel Mustard, played by Martin Mull. Other than this role, what role do you think of most associated with Martin Mull?
Come on. Come on. There is only one American answer.
What?
Oh, shit, his name just left my brain. I just said it 17 times in my brain.
Oh, from Roseanne?
Yeah.
See, that's so funny because you're gonna shoot me. I think of the principal from Sabrina the Teenage Witch.
Oh, generation gap. Holy shit.
Yeah.
Leon, thank you.
Oh, God. That's funny. Martin said that when he went up for this interview, he thought he was going up for Mr. Green. I'm not sure why he thought that. Though he does, Martin Mull does play a gay man a lot. So maybe he was just a...
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
I love
and then
him.
We have...
Two and a Half Men.
Two and a Half Men?
He's the Charlie's pharmacist on Two and a
oh,
Half Men.
Oh, right. And he's on the ranch, too. He's a lawyer.
Oh, is he?
Mm-hmm.
I never watched either of those shows enough to catch him.
Oh, it's good, but, like, you know, mess you up. Like, you'd think because of the cast, like, oh, this is going to be really funny, but... Most of the time, they're fucking your brain pretty good. Like, oh, my God.
Oh, The Ranch?
Yeah.
Yeah. Mom watches it, and I've kind of got the sense. I'd catch bits and pieces of it. I'm just like, God damn.
Murder and miscarriages and dementia and, oh, it's just awful.
All with a laugh track. You're like, whoa.
I don't know what to do.
Then we have Mrs. White, played by Madeline Kahn, who is just, what can you say about Madeline Kahn? She's just amazing. She's like a female equivalent of Tim Curry. Like, I could go on for a million years.
Yeah. Right, right. She's the reason I wanted the black wig.
Muppet movie.
She is in a Muppet movie.
She is in a Muppet movie, yeah.
You're nobody if you've not been in a Muppet movie, sorry.
That's true. That's how you know you're on the map. You're on the pulse. Yeah. Man, we need a new Muppet movie. I know they're owned by Disney now, but like, TikTok. We need a new Muppet movie. It's time. There's a lot of talk online. Sorry for all these tangents, people, but of making a Pride and Prejudice.
I've seen that. Yeah.
And everyone wants, what's his name from Ted Lasso?
Oh,
what's
his name? Oh, God. Hottie McCott. Oh,
Grumpy
Roy.
Face. Roy, yeah. Everyone wants Roy Kent to play Darcy. That would be amazing.
I would watch Roy Kent play Jaws. Like, oh, my God.
You know there's a new Muppet show about to start on Disney.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, it's about the Electric Mayhem.
Sweet.
It's like about how they got together and formed the band, and
that's amazing. I'm gonna watch the fuck out of that.
Yeah.
Oh, Mrs. White. When she arrives, Wadsworth is like putting everyone in the study, and you can tell when they introduce her that you clock immediately that Mrs. White knows a bit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We see Miss Scarlet, played by Leslie Ann Warren. She's broken down on the side of the road. As she gets picked up by Professor Plum, played by Christopher Lloyd. And we meet Mrs. Peacock, played by Eileen Brennan. It's funny because I've been rewatching Will and Grace, and Leslie Ann Warren and Eileen Brennan are both recurring characters on Will and Grace. I'm just like, yeah. Hey.
Really?
Yeah. Leslie Ann Warren plays Will's dad's mistress.
Oh, okay.
And Eileen Brennan plays, I think her name's like Zara or Zara or something. She's Jack's acting coach.
Okay.
Yeah. She's so great. I love Eileen Brennan. She cracks me up. Speaking of Eileen, this was her first movie after her release from the Betty Ford Center. She had she had a painkiller addiction caused by her recovery from a car accident in 82. She said that her greatest physical challenge during shooting was running around the mansion for the reenactment sequences at the end because she was still in pain, but she couldn't take anything. So I felt bad for her.
Yeah, a lot of running.
Yeah. Yeah. Can't imagine. I'd be such a, my fat ass. I'd be like, we're getting this in one take. If anyone fucks up, I'm going to kill you.
Right. So that's what you got to think. Like, they didn't just do this one time.
Right. Then we see Mr. Green, played by Michael McKean. When he arrives, they're at the front door, and the dogs are barking, and Wadsworth goes, sit. And Mr. Green just sits down on the bench. Not he's very you. From what'd you say?
Not you.
Yeah, not you. So, I love Mr. Green. He might be my favorite character.
It triggered with me how attracted I was to him when I was a kid.
From like what movie do you associate most with him?
I don't even it's not even a movie. I'm that old.
Lenny.
Oh, you're not that old. That's like a Nick at Night thing. You weren't growing up watching.
Okay. Nick at Night. All right, you're right. It was syndication. It was syndication.
Yeah. We have to specify. I just think of Spinal Tap. Like, that's my go-to thing in my brain when I think of Michael.
Oh, McKinney. My God. I haven't seen that forever.
If I had to think of a movie with him in it, no one's ever heard of this movie. It's called Daryl.
Oh, yeah, the robot movie.
Yeah.
Oh, I've never seen it. I know, I've heard of it, but I've never seen it.
That's a really good Michael McKean role.
He would have been really young. Ooh.
He's so funny. And I love him in anything Christopher Guest. He's so great in Best in Show. And he's
Best in Show, that's the best.
Yeah, him and they're in that gay couple. And I love the sequence when they're packing for their trip. And he's like, we're going to be in Philadelphia for 48 hours. You've packed 8 kimonos. So Professor Plum and Miss Scarlet arrive and they join the others. According to an interview with Jonathan Lynn, Carrie Fisher was originally cast as Miss Scarlet until she ended up in rehab 4 days before filming started. So Fisher called Jonathan Lynn and agreed to work a furlough type arrangement, which received approval from her clinicians, but the producers vetoed it because of the insurance reasons.
What year was this? Did you say?
Yeah, 85 is when the movie came out.
Oh my God, I was just a baby. Yeah, she would have been a baby. Well, I don't know. She seems too young.
Yeah. She would have read a lot younger.
Sam's like, oh yeah, but hot.
Like Blues Brothers, Carrie Fisher. Oh man.
Yeah. Leslie Ann Warren was cast as the last minute replacement. And I know that Leslie was at one, whatever, married to one of the producers. And I don't know if that was before or after this was made. So I don't know if it was like, hey, we'll get my wife, or if it was, hey, right, I met my wife.
Right. Or, hey, you want to be my wife?
Right. So the cook bangs, there's an introduction in the study, and we established, you know, everyone's using a pseudonym, no one knows their real names. And then the cook bangs on a gong for dinner, and they all go in and sit down. it's just like really awkward and quiet for a while, and Professor Plum and Mrs. White are both like loudly slurping their soup, and everyone's just staring at them, just like with daggers in their eyes. That's got to be one of my pet peeves too. Like, oh, soup noises, just oh,
just people eating in general.
Yeah, there's a word for that too.
Yeah, I could listen to a dog munch on a carrot all day. Excuse me, over. Let me hear little friggin' Sally do it. Nuh-uh.
So funny. I wish I could remember what that word is. But yeah, there's a specific word for that if that, like, triggers something in you. So Mrs. Peacock tries to break the ice, right? So she starts rambling.
Me.
Yeah, I mean, that would probably be me too. I'm just like, yeah, it'd be too awkward to sit in silence. I don't know. I'd be so nervous to be the one that would start, but I'd be nervous to sit in silence too. And Mr. Green points out that he recognizes Mrs. Peacock, and because she's a politician's wife, because Mr. Green works in Washington too. And then we sort out that Professor Plum works for the UN, and it just slowly all unravels at where they realize they are all linked to the government in one way or the other, no matter how distantly. There's also like a throwaway line that only means something to one of the endings. We'll get to it eventually, but this movie has like three endings and had even more written. So different story plots matter to different endings. And Wadsworth makes the comment, well, Miss Peacock makes the comment, this is one of my favorite recipes. And he's like, I know, madam. And if you have to wait for the payoff, but you're just like, that's weird. How would he know? You know?
Right.
And then Mr. Body arrives, and they all thought that Mr. Body was the one that invited them, but he seems surprised that they're there. So they adjourn from the dining room to the study. And Wadsworth has an envelope, kind of looks like the little manila envelopes you get in the game, that has his instructions that he has to read. So he opens it up and starts explaining the situation. And so they're all victims of blackmail. And Mr. Body is the one that is blackmailing them. But Mr. Body, before like that all gets revealed, Mr. Body tries to bolt. But Wadsworth explains that the doors are locked and the windows are barred, which isn't true. We see the windows open at different points in the movie.
Right.
That one. So his body tries to escape through the greenhouse, but he's stopped by the ferocious dogs. And that always kills me, too, because about like halfway through this movie, people start like arriving and leaving and stuff. Where are the dogs?
Yeah.
That dog in the back window is also a completely different dog than you see before.
Is it?
Yeah, because
he's a Doberman.
Right, he's feeding German Shepherds, and this is a big old Doberman. Oh. Well, how'd you come from?
I never even caught that. That's so funny.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, they're all victims of blackmail. So, Professor Plum is being blackmailed because he lost his medical license for stripping his patients. Mrs. Peacock accepts bribes to sway her politician husband. Miss Scarlet is a madam and runs a brothel in Washington. Colonel Mustard, what does Colonel Mustard do? Oh, he's fucking prostitutes, right? That's what he's being blackmailed for.
Yeah.
It's so funny. He's arguing with, Wadsworth, and he's like, are you trying to make me look stupid? He's like, you don't need any help from me. And he's like, that's right.
That's right.
And Mrs. White is being blackmailed because she's being accused of murdering her husband. She's had many husbands. Her first husband disappeared. And he was an illusionist. And she's like, well, he just wasn't a very good illusionist.
Wasn't very good. I love it. He's like, how many husbands have you had? She's like, mine or other people's?
Right, he's like, mine are other women's. Five, just the five. That's in a couple scenes from now, so we'll get to that. Mr. Green is being blackmailed because he's homosexual and works for the State Department. Of course, this is set in the 50s, and that's no bueno. Ironically, it's J. Edgar Hoover comes up later, because at this point in time, he was the head of the FBI. And it was been long inferred that Hoover was gay.
I thought about that too.
Yeah.
And I thought, in the big scheme of things, this guy's got, like, really nothing. Like, he's right. Just trying to keep his job legit. Like, it's nothing compared to these other people.
Right, totally. It's just ironic to think that, like, especially because with one of the endings, what we find out about Mr. Green, mm-hmm. is, like, I think J. Edgar Hoover even had a thing called, like, Operation Baby Doll, where he was trying to out all of the homosexuals in the government. But it was one of those things that was like, the lady doth protest too much.
Right.
And it's like, okay, Hoover, were you trying to out everybody because you didn't want gays in the government, or were you just trying to, like, hook up?
Right. Who's available? Yeah. Right. Exactly.
Anyway. So once they realize that Mr. Body is the one that's blackmailing them, they all, like, you know, tussle with him, and Mrs. White knees him in the balls. But Wadsworth explains that police are on their way. They'll be there in like 45 minutes. So he encourages them all that if we all just tell the police the truth about what we're being blackmailed for, the body will be arrested and then we'll be free from blackmailing. But we have it. It's still in a few minutes before they explain how Wadsworth even plays into all this. Body reveals a bag full of murder weapons. There's a candlestick, a noose, a pipe, a wrench, a pistol, and a knife, just like in the game. And Body tells them to kill Wadsworth. They're like, if you call the cops on me, I will out all of your stories to the press. So I'll make sure that in court, all of your shit gets made public. Meanwhile, if we take one of these weapons that I'm going to give you and kill Wadsworth instead, then we can just go on with how we were before. So he gives everyone weapons and he turns off the light. And then we hear a thump, a moan, a gunshot, and then a scream. And Peacock turns on the lights. And Body is laying on the ground, presumably dead. Are we all on board so far?
Yeah.
That was a lot of fun going back. So, this is like the dumbest trivia in the world and so pedantic, but lead pipes are really soft. That always killed me. Because the lead pipes are, like, one of the weapons. They don't make pipes out of lead. You can't even, like, put, like, the, what you call it? you can't even carve into them to make them be able to screw into other things. They're so
right.
soft.
Right.
So, blood pipe is just a misnomer. And what's funny is, like, in that moment, you can eliminate a couple different people immediately for Mr. Body's murder
right.
at that moment. Because, like, well, he wasn't strangled, because that would have taken longer than what, you know what I mean?
Right.
So it wasn't Mrs. White. You know, he wasn't shot. The gunshot went zipped past his head and is in the wall, so it wasn't Plum. You know what I mean? It's just...
Right.
They took a minute, because they're all immediately turning each other, like, oh, we don't know who did it. Well, you can kind of eliminate some people. So somebody, I think it's Mr. Green, someone is like, well, maybe he was poisoned because they were drinking cognac. And so Miss Peacock starts screaming because she just taken a big drink. And so Mr. Green slaps her to get her to stop. I love that trope in movies of, like, screaming the, or slapping the hysterical person who's screaming.
Mm-hmm.
I've never seen that happen in real life, but it would be really funny.
I was just going to say, no one has ever slapped the shit out of me to stop me from screaming, so I call bullshit, because that shit goes on forever.
What, you screaming?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, we suddenly start to hear a vet screaming from the other room where she's, because the whole situation is being recorded. And she's in the billiard room listening to the recording. So she starts screaming. So everyone runs to the billiard room to see what she's screaming about. And this is stupid trivia too, but the screams aren't actually Colleen Camp. Those are Leslie Ann Warren's screams from different points in the movie that they, like, redubbed and reused.
Huh.
I don't know why. So they bring a vet in the study with them, and Wadsworth takes the recordings. So everything up to that point was recorded, but from the here on out, nothing is. So it was kind of pointless for it to be recorded at all.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where we find out that Wadsworth was Mr. Body's former butler. And he was the one that invited them all, not Mr. Body. While Wadsworth is, like, telling his whole backstory, everyone takes a seat down in the study, but there's no seats for Mr. Green. So he's just, like, going around trying to find somewhere to park himself. And he just kind of, like, perches in the corner on an end table. And halfway through the story, it just collapses. Why on the floor? Excuse me. Man, don't get COVID, folks. It sucks. Cannot quit coughing. So Body used to blackmail Wadsworth's wife. Sam, tell us what Wadsworth's wife was being blackmailed for.
I don't remember.
Oh, what we got you here for?
Good question. I don't remember.
I don't remember either.
She was friends with socialists.
Oh, right.
And it's so funny because Wadsworth gets all choked up and he's like, everyone makes mistakes. But they didn't have any money for Body to blackmail him with, so he basically just held them as slaves. So they, like, worked for him as slaves until Wadsworth's wife killed herself, which is awful. It's terrible. So after this is all revealed, they're kind of like, well, you know, who could have killed Body? Is there anyone else in the house? And they remember, oh, shit, the cook is here. Let's go check on the cook. So they all go, well, I say all, but not really. At every different time when they, like, run to another room, there's, like, certain people missing for different plot points. It's just all confusing. Most of everybody runs to the kitchen, right?
I really should, like, watch it and then, like, write down each frame, or not each frame, but each scene. Like, look and see who's not there.
It's funny because they, like, try they have moments like that to try to make, have things make sense. And I'll get into it more once we've talked about all three endings. But like, there's shit in the endings that are literally impossible.
Thank you. Yeah. That's why this movie annoyed me so much the first time, because I thought, what? And I thought, maybe I just didn't keep up.
No, it's like literally impossible. Like, I'll get into it, because, and please, credit where credit is due, I didn't unpack all this. This is like research that I did from other people right. that were like, okay, this is wow, this why this is impossible. But thank you, internet, for providing for assholes like me who like to pick apart movies. It's just a comedy. It's not that serious, but it's like, okay. So they find her in the freezer. There's like a walk-in cooler and she's in there stabbed in the back. And she falls into Mr. Green's arms and she's a bigger lady. So he's like struggling. He's like, help, help me. And they lower her down onto the ground. Let's see, Sam and Peck. Oh, this is where it gets into Mrs. White's whole deal. And that's where there's like, how many husbands have you had? She said, mine or other women's? Five. Yes, just the five. She said, men should be like tissues, strong, soft, and disposable.
So messed up.
Yeah. And I think it's, I forget who's yelling at her. I think it's Mustard, but he's like, you're like a black widow and men are like the flies. And she's like, flies are where men are most vulnerable. So they decide to pick up the cook's body and take it into the study. But when they get there, the Mr. Body's body is gone. Side note on Mr. Body. The actor who plays Mr. Body's name is Lee Ving. Huh. Which is crazy. Yeah, his name is Leaving. Anyway.
Hi, I'm leaving. You got here.
Yeah. Right. But his like entire life is an Abbott Costello routine. So Wadsworth reveals you know, there's evidence there against that Body was using to blackmail him, including negatives. And there's photo negatives of, what's his name? Mustard. Mustard with prostitutes. And so Scarlett takes them too, because it implicates her as well, because they're like her prostitutes. Mrs. Peacock goes, she goes to the bathroom. Such a juvenile joke.
She's oh, like, shut up. It's my favorite.
No, go ahead. What's the joke?
I don't remember how it goes. I just know. I don't remember. I was trying to think of what she says to make her say, so now I'm just going to powder my nose.
Right. She asks, she asks a vet, she said, is there a restroom in the hall? And she says, oui, oui, madame. And she's like, no, I just need a powder my
nose. Oh, yeah, oui, oui, madame.
It's so sophomoric, but it's so funny.
Oh, well, that describes me, I guess.
Sophomore.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Oh, excuse me, I need a drink. I'm drinking Monster, which is not hydrating at all. I don't know why I bother.
Do you drink water ever?
I drink a shit ton of water. Thank you very much.
Okay, good.
Yeah, it was funny. My sidebar, I went to the doctor recently and I had a checkup and I'm like healthy as a horse, shockingly. But she was like lecturing me about stuff that, you know, all doctors lecture people about. And you never argue with your doctor, but she was talking about, she's like, you need to drink a lot of water. And in my head, I'm like, I do. And she's like, you're really fair skinned. You need to wear a lot of sunscreen. And I'm like, I don't go out. I'm just like, yes, doctor. She was like, shocked at how pale I was. She's like, because she's African American, and she's like, you are so fair skinned. Gotta wear sunblock. I'm just like, well, there's a reason why I'm so fair skinned.
Right.
Anyway. So when Miss Peacock goes into the bathroom, she finds Body's body. And she's like about to faint from shock from finding a dead body. And Wadsworth is like, I'll catch you, fall into my arms. And he loops his arms around her. And she just collapses onto the floor underneath them. It's so funny. Which that probably wasn't a fun little physical gag for her either.
Ouch, no.
Yeah. And who is it that's shouting? Is it Mr. Green? He's like just having a meltdown. Or no, yeah. Mr. Green's yelling at Wadsworth because Wadsworth is shouting.
Right.
Because at one point Wadsworth literally just says, I'm shouting. And it makes the candlestick fall on his head, which every time it happens, I can never see where it's falling from. It's just there all of a sudden.
It's on the top of the door frame.
Yeah, just randomly sitting on, because like, this time I caught it and I just watched it and then I just saw the whole thing happen. But it's like, how the fuck did it get up there? Who's going to reach that high?
Right. It's like, it's a, kind of like a video game. It like it just appears and like bonks him on the head every time. But it knocks him out. For a second. It makes him fall down anyway. So they decide to put the bodies on the sofa in the study and decide to lock all the weapons in the cabinet. And they're like, well, Wadsworth, you have the key, so that's not fair because we can't trust you. We don't, you know, you could be the killer. So they agree to throw the key outside. But when they go to open the door, there's a motorist there, a guy at the door with a head broken down. And he needs to use the phone. So they let him go to the lounge and they like lock him in the lounge and throw the keys outside. and I forget whose line this is. I just wrote it down because it made me laugh. I think it's Mustard. But there, he like sticks his head in the study. He's like, just checking. Yep, two corpses. Everything's fine. But Mustard suggests that they split up and search the house. So they draw lots and to search in pairs. They decide they like Wadsworth chops these long fireplace matches into different lengths to determine how they're paired up. And this is such a little thing, but like
as let me guess what you're gonna say. No wait. No. Go. Never mind.
I was gonna say like. To make sure that the right people are paired up for what who needs to be paired up in the script, like Tim Curry would have had to hold those matches in a very particular order. To
right.
Make, you know what I mean? Like, because all I just think about that kind of stuff because, like, as a stage manager, like, I would have had to have prepped those props every night and make sure that they're being held in the right order. This is such a little thing, but, like, that would have been a pain in the ass.
Oh, yeah, that's not at all what I was going to say.
What were you going to say?
It takes these grown-ass people a really long time to figure out who has their stickmate.
That's true.
That scene goes on for a stupid long time. I'm just like, come on, people. Jeez.
Yeah, in silence.
Yes. Yeah, that's no odd, I think. Because yeah. It's supposed to be eerie or something, but it just drags on forever.
So, Yvette and Mr. Green are paired together. And every pairing is, like, kind of ironic if you think about it. So you have the sex pot and the gay guy. And they take the attic. And you have Mrs. Peacock and Professor Plum. And Peacock is, like, the most sexless of the women.
Right.
And then you have philandering Mr. Plum. And they take the cellar. Then you have Mrs. White and Wadsworth. And they check the second floor. And then Mustard and Scarlet take the ground floor, the main floor. And Mustard and Scarlet pretty quickly find a secret passage. And it lets it in from, I forget where it goes from, but it ends up in the lounge. And when they get in the lounge, they find that the phone guy is dead. The motorist is dead. And now they're locked in the lounge, which kills me because I'm like, just go back through the
right.
Secret passage, but whatever. They start panicking because they're in this room with a dead guy. So they're screaming and everyone runs to help them. But the key to unlock the lounge is missing. So Wadsworth tries to break the door down with his shoulder and he just fucking falls down. So Yvette runs to grab the gun to shoot open the door and she trips on Wadsworth and it makes her shoot the gun in the air and hit the chandelier. So it, like, is tenuously starting to fall from the ceiling because she shot the rope that's holding the chandelier. So then a vet tries again, and she shoots the lock, and it goes through the door and hits Mustard in the shoulder, which is another thing. Mustard has a gunshot for the rest of this movie, and it's never addressed.
Right.
Then he comes out, and he's all, like, pissed off because he got shot, and he's like, I could have been killed, and then the chandelier almost falls on him within, like, inches of him. So chandelier falls, crashes, makes a big mess. And then they all realize, well, Yvette just had the gun, which means the cabinet with the weapons has been unlocked. And they don't know how that happened either. So, okay. We still all on the same page, everybody? Listeners, yes. You good? Okay. Great physical comedy. So the doorbell rings again. And this time there's a police officer. And because he saw the motorist's car, and he, which is because we find out later, like, this police officer is from DC too. So he was just like driving through New England and is completely off duty, but was kind enough to see a car and be concerned. So he comes up and asks to use the phone. Gotta love the '50s. No one, you know, there's no cell phones. Everyone has to. Which, this would make the second Tim Curry movie where there's people having to go in the rain to a...
You know, hello! Yeah.
So they lock this poor cop in the library. And the phone rings, and the cop answers it, and it's J. Edgar Hoover. You know, like you do.
Like you do.
So Wadsworth, they, like, he unlocks it and goes in there, and Wadsworth takes the phone call. And the police officer wants to look around because everyone's acting really suspicious. So they, like, manipulate the bodies to make it look like they're all having, like, a raucous party. So, like, I think Mrs. White is, like, making out with Body's dead body.
Yeah.
Peacock and Green, I think, are, like, holding up the cook's body and making it look like they're making out in the corner. Plum and Scarlet are in the next room with the motorist's dead body, and they make him just look really drunk. And score, Plum got to make out with Scarlet. He's probably like, yes. Sidebar about Scarlet, now that I'm thinking about it, because now I'm just thinking about making out with Leslie Ann Warren. Her corset that she has to wear. She has a titty shelf going on, too.
Mm-hmm.
Her corset is so tight. She was, like, miserable. And in between takes, everyone else would be, like, goofing around and having fun. And she would just have to find somewhere to lean. Because she just couldn't. Because there was that billiards room on the set. And in between takes, like, all the guys would go and play billiards.
Mm-hmm.
And she wanted to play, but she couldn't. Because she literally couldn't bend over in that fucking dress.
Yeah, you could tell she was struggling rolling around on that couch.
Yeah, totally. Oh, God. Poor Leslie Ann Warren. So the police officer, you know, doesn't know what's going on because they successfully hid all the suspicious bodies. And he's just like, you know, Wadsworth comes out from the phone call and he's like, you know, nothing illegal is going on here. It's a free country. And Wadsworth doesn't know what's happening. So he goes, I didn't know it was that free. There is a it's my favorite moment of the whole movie. I literally had to pause because I was laughing so hard I almost peed my pants. Mr. Green's smile at this scene. He says, Wadsworth says, I didn't know it was that free. And he's like behind the police officer's shoulder, like looking at Wadsworth, like all panicky. And the police officer turns and looks at him, and he's just this big maniacal smile. It's so funny. Michael McKean's so great. Oh, God. I need to make a gif of it. It's so great. So, once the cop, does the cop just straight up leave, or do they lock him in again? I can't remember.
They locked him back in the library.
Okay. They lock him back up. Poor Sam. Hi, Sam. Hi. I told you this is gonna be a lot of rambling because this movie is really hard. So But I feel like I've done a fairly good job of keeping this plot in order so far, right?
Yeah, so far.
Ooh, gummy. They lock the cop back up. They're like, we haven't finished searching the house. We don't know if there's anyone else still in the house. So they break back up into their pairs and continue to search. And Mustard and Scarlet find another secret passage from the kitchen to the study. Now, during all this hubbub, someone turns off all the lights in the house, which is why it's fused, right? So, a vet sneaks into the billiard room, I think it is.
The billiard room.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And she meets with someone who whispers, did anyone recognize you? And she's like, and she says something. And then whoever she's meeting with strangles her with the noose. And then someone else, well, someone else or the same person, it depends on which ending we have, during this whole sequence, someone bludgeons the cop with the pipe. So now the cop's dead. So now we're up to 5 dead bodies. Then the doorbell rings, and it's a singing telegram. And then whoever answers the door, which we don't see, shoots the singing telegram girl. Who, by the way, do you guys know who that is?
That's Sam's tidbit. Go ahead, babe.
Jane Whelan from the Go-Go's.
How random is that?
I know. Hey, you want to be in this movie? Sure.
I don't know. Like, how long were the Go-Go's around? Was this like peak Go-Go's? Was this pre-Go-Go's?
Yeah, probably so. Because they were pretty big in the 80s.
That's so funny. This was the point of the notes where I wrote, where are the damn dogs?
No doubt.
We've had the motorists show up, the cops show up, the singing telegram show up, the dogs have just fucked off. We see, and everyone is still searching, while all this is happening, people are still searching the house in the dark. And we see Mrs. White in what we can assume is like a nursery, but she gets startled by the most giant jack-in-the-box. Where the fuck did that come from? Why do they have... It's like the size of a person.
Kind of there in the corner.
Oh my god. That would scare me too. Shit. And then Wadsworth... So Mrs. White's screaming and Wadsworth's trying to find her in the dark. And he accidentally walks into the shower and turns it on. So Wadsworth goes downstairs and turns the lights back on. Oh, this is a stupid tangent, but I'm thinking about it. Fuses. So we have a fuse box in by our kitchen, right? And the fuse that runs the microwave is the same one that runs our deep fryer. And if you try to do them at the same time, the microwave will pop and stop working. And it's a big pain in the ass when you're trying to cook dinner and cook a bunch of things at once. And sometimes the microwave...
I had to move my microwave for that reason. Yep.
It sucks. Oh, yeah, because your microwave used to be in the corner, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and sometimes we don't even have to have the deep fryer on. Sometimes the microwave will just say, fuck you, I'm not going to work.
Yeah.
So the other morning, it's so funny because we were just sitting around watching TV. Mom was still in bed. Garrett and I were just like sitting, drinking coffee, watching TV. And he's like, well, I'm going to fix that breaker. I'm like, right now? He's like, yeah. So he just gets up, fucking 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock in the morning. Turns all the power off in the house and replaces his breaker. So that he puts a new fuse in. So now it has like 10 more amps. I don't know how electricity works, whatever. It has 10 more amps to it. So now it can hopefully can run both of those items at the same time.
God, I wish I had his drive. Just like, I'm going to fix something today.
I know, right? Like, and it didn't take him long, but like, I'm never just sitting enjoying my morning coffee and think I'm going to get up and fix this thing.
Do some electrical work.
Right. I have executive dysfunction. I can barely clean my cat's box. I need like, like, set myself up to do that. But what's funny is that night, later that same day, that night, Mom is making dinner with the deep fryer. And I'm sure it was just a coincidence of like the new oil she put in or whatever she was cooking, but it was like popping like crazy. It wasn't just like sizzle, sizzle, sizzle. It was like pop, pop, pop. pop, pop, pop. And we just kept looking at Mom, expecting her to, like, do something about it, and she's just ignoring it. And I look at Gary, I'm just like, how many more amps did you put into that?
Oh.
Right? I was just like, did you, like, turn our deep fryer into a deadly weapon?
French fries in 45 seconds.
Right. It was terrifying. Of course, Mom's making livers, which are disgusting.
That's why it was popping. Because I was going to ask you if she was making livers. Because, oh, God, that's scary. That's like house fire.
Yeah. God. And, of course, our paper towels are right above the deep fryer. So every single time, not only are our paper towels probably getting dirty, I'm also just waiting for there to just be a grease fire. Just whoosh.
Well, I can't believe she doesn't lean on an air fryer. Come on, lady. It is 20 of 23.
She's had it for like 2 years now. She hasn't used it once.
There are some things I can imagine, like battered stuff, that would be a wreck. But come on, man.
Yeah. Well, we just don't have anywhere to put it. If we had outlets on our island.
Yeah, where the goddamn deep fryers where you put it. It goes where the deep fryer went.
Well, yeah, but like you said, she's like really nervous about using the air fryer for battered things. She doesn't think it'll work.
Yeah.
Whatever. Hey, crap. So Wadsworth turns the lights back on. And now we get like a really long sequence of where Wadsworth is convinced that he has it all figured out, right? So he runs everyone through the night's events. And it's very, like, commedia dell'arte. It's very, like, slapsticky, physical comedy, theaterish type running from point A to point B. And it takes up a large chunk of the runtime. And it's very impressive to watch Tim Curry do all this. But if you actually think of, like, the night's events, this does take up a big chunk of the movie because he said at the beginning that he called the cops and they'll be there in 45 minutes. So if it wasn't for this whole sequence, this whole movie would last like 45 minutes. But basically, while he's running through everything, he explains that the five other victims, other than Mr. Boddy, were Mr. Boddy's informants. And each had a connection to one of the other guests, which implicates everybody and just makes everything more confuddled. So the cook used to work for Mrs. Peacock. So there's the payoff from the beginning of there's a recipe that she likes. Which, what is it that they say it is?
Monkey brains.
Monkey brains, yeah, that's right. Ugh.
It just looks like they were eating piles of whipped cream to me, but...
Yeah. It kind of looked like sausage gravy. It was just... So cook used to be Mrs. Peacock's. The cop was being bribed by Scarlett to overlook her indiscretion as madam. The motorist was Mustard's driver during World War II. A vet was one of Scarlett's call girls and also had an affair with Mrs. White's late husband. And the singing telegram girl was a patient that Professor Plum had an affair. So now it's just like, well, everyone had reason to kill any of these people. So now we get into the three endings. Oh boy. Okay. So three endings were shot and a different one was shown at each theater. So like the idea was the producer, the filmmaker, I can't remember if it was Jonathan Lynn's idea or what, but it's basically like, oh, we'll randomly show different endings, and then that'll make everyone want to go back and see it again to see the different endings.
Can you imagine having a conversation with someone that saw a different movie than you did and being like, what the fuck?
Not only would it have been confusing, it would have pissed me off. And I sure as shit wouldn't go back and pay to see a different 15-minute ending.
Yeah.
So on the DVD, however, I don't know if it's on the DVD version you guys have, cause I watch it streaming. on streaming, and when they show it on TV, they just show all three endings. But there's an option on the DVD where you can just play the movie with one randomly selected ending.
Interesting. No, yeah. Ours just plays all three.
Because ours is an old burnt one.
Yeah, we have a a movie gallery copy.
Oh, nice. So, and in some cities, the newspaper would print ads indicating which version, saying like ending A, ending B, or ending C, was being shown at each theater. So you could even like, you could cheat technically. You could be like, well, I've already seen ending A, I can go back and see it, ending B. But nobody right. was doing that because nobody went to see this movie. It didn't make its money back.
Right.
Okay, so the three endings. At this point, I got to cheat and I got to use Wikipedia, y'all, because it's my brain hurts and we're going to use Wikipedia's summary of each ending, okay? So ending A, or quote, how it might have happened, if you watch the, like, the version with all three endings. Yvette murdered the cook with the knife and Mr. Body with Mrs. Scarlet's candlestick on orders from Miss Scarlet, who then killed Yvette and the other victims. Planning to sell the guests' secret, Miss Scarlet prepares to shoot Wadsworth, who asserts there are no more bullets, causing them to do like an Abba Costello bit about counting.
2 + 1 + 1 + 2.
You actually try to follow their math, it makes no sense. It's just like, okay, you're both wrong and stupid. Please stop talking. But he disarms her, and law enforcement raid the house. And of course, there's the running gag in all three endings that, like, communism was a red herring. She just was going to sell all their secrets, not for political reasons, but just for monetary reasons.
The other running gag was that every time that everything stops for a minute, Wadsworth would offer everyone fruit or dessert.
Right. which is funny. It's like, aren't they the same thing? He's a good but I like too at the beginning, I didn't mention it, but like I think Mustard is asking him who he is and he's like, I'm a butler. He's like, what do you do? He's like, I buttle. I buttle.
I like where he's like, well, I'm a butler, so I like to keep the kitchen tidy, so let's right. take this body out of here.
<the body. laughs> I'm recording in my dining room like I usually do and facing out the windows. And Lucky and Archie are just in the dirt just rolling around like idiots and it's really cute.
Aww.
Aw. Well, Lucky's rolling in the dirt. Archie's standing over her like, what are you doing? Anyway, so law enforcement raid the house. And when Wadsworth asks where the chief of police is, it is revealed that he, oh, I forgot to mention, at one point an evangelist shows up at the door for like no reason. But that turned out to be the chief of police. Chief of police congratulates Wadsworth, and who is revealed to be an undercover FBI agent. Wadsworth attempts to demonstrate the revolver was empty, but a remaining bullet is revealed when he shoots the rope holding a chandelier. He starts to do the math, and the chandelier falls and almost hits Colonel Mustard again. So that's how it might have happened. Ending A.
I remember I got all excited the first time I saw it because I thought it was over.
Well, this is what
kind of happened. I was like, oh, shit. Right. But ending B, how about this? Mrs. Peacock killed all the victims to conceal that she took bribes from foreign powers. She holds the others at gunpoint as they allow her to leave. Outside, she's surprised by the evangelist, who's the chief of police. The police emerge and arrest her. Now revealed to be an undercover FBI agent set to investigate her while being congratulated by the chief of police, Wadsworth asks again whether anyone would care for fruit or dessert. That I feel like not because of like logistical reasons, but just is most improbable because I don't think Miss Peacock could have physically done all the things she would have needed to do, but
right.
Whatever. That's one of the neatest ones. Oh, my phone's going off next to me. It's not fucking up my microphone, is it?
Mm-mm.
Okay, good. Sometimes if I get a text message while it's near my microphone, it gets all stupid. Quit texting me, people. Okay. So, here's what really happened, according to the film. The most convoluted of the endings. Okay, strap in. Professor Plum missed Mr. Body with a revolver, but later killed him in the hall with a candlestick. Mrs. Peacock stabbed the cook in the kitchen with the knife. Colonel Mustard bludgeoned the motorist with the wrench in the lounge. Mrs. White strangled Yvette in the billiards room out of jealousy and hatred. And we get that amazing...
Creating the best gif of all time.
Right. Do you remember her little speech, Lacey?
I just see flames. That's all I know. Flames.
This was totally ad-libbed by Madeline Kahn, which makes it even more brilliant. She's like, I hated her so much that heaving flames on the side of my face.
You do a really good impression.
Thank you. But yes, in this version, Mrs. White killed Yvette out of jealousy. And at this ending, White reveals that she did also kill her husband. Miss Scarlet clubbed the cop in the library with a lead pipe. When Mr. Green is suspected of shooting the singing telegraph girl, he states that he didn't do it, which is a running gag because in all of these endings, Green did nothing. Right. He's the one person that, like, I didn't do it. The revolver is missing, and whoever has it shot her. Wadsworth draws Professor Plum's revolver, stating that he shot her, and reveals that he is the real Mr. Body. When Professor Plum asks who he really shot, Mr. Body states that it was his, you know, who Mr. Body, quote unquote, was actually his expendable butler. With his spies and informants disposed of, Mr. Body, Wadsworth, plans to continue blackmailing the guests until Mr. Green then draws another revolver, kills Wadsworth / Mr. Body, reveals that he is an undercover FBI agent, and that the call from Hoover was for him. He opens the front door to bring in the authorities to arrest the others, revealed to have posed the evangelist, the chief of police, asks who did it. The other guests begin pointing at each other. Mr. Green clarifies that they are all responsible for their respective deaths, but then he states that he was the one who killed Mr. Body in the hall with the revolver. After being patted on the shoulder by the chief of police, Mr. Green declares, okay, chief, take him away. I'm going to go home and sleep with my wife. So that's the quote, what really happened. Oh boy. Okay. Now, here's where it gets fun. Let me see if I can find this explanation that I found this morning. Let's see. I guess. Oh, okay. So, there was a fourth ending.
Let me see if I can find it. Oh, Lord.
That was written, but not shot. Let me see if I can find it. Sorry. Okay, fourth ending scripted and... Oh, and they did shoot it. I'm sorry, they did shoot it, but it was in which Wadsworth committed all the murders out of a twisted need for perfection in his life. He reveals that he poisoned everyone with a slow-acting toxin in their drink. It ended with Wadsworth being killed by dogs as he attempts to escape by car from the house. And it was deemed too dark, so they cut it. Because in it, like, everyone would have been poisoned to death, and he would have been mauled to death by dogs.
Yeah, no.
Yeah. let's see. Ending B. Okay. In ending B, where it's revealed Mrs. Peacock murdered all six people, it is revealed that she is actually shot dead by the chief of police when he confronts her at her car. So that in that ending where she's, like, arrested, they originally had filmed that she got shot.
Oh, wow.
Oh.
Yeah. But that was deemed, quote, too dark, and so they cut it out. But you can still see the cop's gun smoking from the shot. It's just like, we've already killed six people. Like, at what point?
Right. You're making out with a dead guy. Like, seriously? That's right.
Why is it now, like, too dark? I don't know. Okay. Here we go. This is very convoluted, but I thought I found it fascinating. The third ending. The last three murders, specifically Mrs. White's killing of Yvette, is physically impossible given the order of events. Okay? The lights are turned off, according to Wadsworth, by Mrs. White. After some physical gags, we see Mrs. White in the nursery on the second floor. Where, how did she turn off the lights and then go upstairs to see the...
Yeah.
As we hear her screaming upstairs... Yvette is coming down the stairs to the ground floor where she enters the billiard room. Yvette enters the billiard room where she speaks to her killer, allegedly.
Who's already in the room.
Right. Who, despite just being heard screaming upstairs, is already there hiding in the shadows of the room. As Mrs. White is strangling Yvette, Miss Scarlet is also out in the hall sneaking into the library to kill the cop. Meanwhile, Wadsworth, who has the gun, has come downstairs to answer the door and kill the telegram girl. In the moments that follow, in full view of Colonel Mustard in the dining room, Miss Scarlet leaves the library and somehow, without crossing paths, Wadsworth and Mrs. White return upstairs, Wadsworth back into the bedroom, and Mrs. White back into the nursery. Like, it's completely impossible.
Yeah.
And that's, the third ending is supposed to be like, this is what really happened. It's just like, well, sure. Oh, this is someone expanded on what I was saying earlier. It's like, of the three endings, B, with Mrs. Peacock as the lone killer, is the least believable. While it's possible, however unlikely, that she could have killed most of the victims, the scenario surrounding the murderess is dubious at best. She could have stolen away from Professor Plum without him realizing to get to the cellar across... She couldn't have, rather, stolen away from Professor Plum, got out of the cellar, across the hall, to the cupboard, got in the wrench... entered the lounge, through the conservatory, killed the motorist, then back through the passage and returned to the cellar where she emerges with Professor Plum moments later. All without crossing paths with Scarlet and Mustard.
Right.
Like, it's just... and I know it's a comedy, and it doesn't matter, and it's all silliness. But it's like, there are other instances where they, like, took pains to make sure that there were certain people not in the shot. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
They're
right.
Running around from room to room. Well, such and such wasn't here when we found the cook because he was here doing this and blah, 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 blah. I'm just like, okay. But then we also padded the movie with shots of Jack in the Boxes screaming and such that make other things impossible. So it's like, okay, Jonathan Lynn, get your shit together. Tighten it up a little bit. My brain hurts. Were there any, like, trivia tidbits that I missed that we found interesting?
I don't think so.
Nothing.
You were very thorough.
Thank you. Huzzah. What was I going to say? Oh, there's been a lot of talk since like 2016 on about making a remake. And production keeps going in and out of pre-production. Like, they talk about it, and then it stops, and they're like, oh, now it's in pre-production again, and then it stops. And I don't want there to be a remake, personally.
No.
The main reason I say that is I feel like in a post Knives Out world, it's not needed.
Yeah.
I don't like Knives Out, personally. I know everyone loves Knives Out. I don't, personally, because there was too much vomiting in it, and it just made me nervous. But I feel like Rian Johnson basically made a Clue remake.
Right.
With that. And I haven't seen Glass Onion yet. Have you guys seen Glass Onion? The sequel?
Not yet.
No, not yet.
I will give Rian Johnson this. Have you guys watched Poker Face on Peacock?
No.
No.
It's by the same guy that did Knives Out, and it's with Natasha Lyonne. And it's basically like Columbo. If instead of Columbo, it's Natasha Lyonne.
Really?
she's just like, in the first episode, we establish an incident that makes her like have to run from these shady guys. So the rest of the series is her traveling around the country in her car from and like picking up odd jobs and stuff. But everywhere she ends up, someone ends up getting killed. And the shtick is she has this uncanny ability that she can tell if someone is lying. And it's not like supernatural. It's not like clinical. It's just a thing. It's just a gift that she has. It's just if someone lies to her face, she can, she's like bullshit. She can tell me.
Mm-hmm.
It's a really, really good show. There's new episodes. There's 8 episodes out and there's new episodes every Thursday. So check it out on Peacock. If you're into this kind of stuff, you'll like
cool.
It. Yeah. Any other thoughts on Clue?
No.
Whew, I did all that in an hour and 20 minutes.
Woo-hoo! Yeah, good job.
I'm very proud of myself. Whew. Again, thank you to the internet because I would not have been able to keep all that straight without like cross-referencing a lot of things.
Yeah, because it is extremely confusing.
Yes, very much so. But it is great and it is iconic. It's definitely a cult classic. It's so funny. You know, I throw around the term cult classic a lot on this show. It's a pretty loose interpretation in some instances. But like, this is one of the examples that when you tell me, oh, this movie bombed, that it just blows my mind. You know what I mean?
Right. Oh, yeah.
Especially with the cast.
Yeah. And I don't know, is that nostalgia goggles? Is it, were these people more famous after the fact?
Yeah.
Than they were at the time?
Absolutely. You know what I
mean? Yeah.
Because at that point, probably the biggest stars would have been Christopher Lloyd and Tim Curry.
Yeah. Yeah. Huh. It's funny, too, to think of Rowan Atkinson being up to for the role and be considered not famous enough.
Yeah.
I know.
Oh. Did you guys watch that show he was on Netflix?
No, I was going to. I just never did. It's one of the 400 things on the list.
Yeah, I heard it was terrible if it's...
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that is like someone in versus the bee, man versus bee or whatever. There was also a episode of Psych that had, let's see if I can remember. I think it had Leslie Ann Warren, Christopher Lloyd, and Michael McKean. I don't know, it had three people. Yeah, and it was like a send-up of this movie. And it was shortly after Madeline Kahn had passed, and they dedicated the episode to Madeline Kahn.
That's cool.
Yeah.
I forgot that she passed away.
I know. I forget all the time. I'm just like, oh.
I always am like, there's probably 100 people, like, when I hear their name, I'm like, are they dead? And I know that's awful.
No, but I'm the same way. I gotta Google it constantly. I'm just like, are they dead?
There's a handful of people, like, I'll completely forget that they died, and then I have to go all back through it again. What? You know?
And then there are people who are like a million years old. Like I was watching Will and Grace the other day, which by the way, every human being on planet Earth was on Will and Grace.
Yeah.
Every episode there's a, it's worse than Friends. It's like every episode is there's a huge guest star. It was crazy. At its peak, it was like the show to be on. But I was watching an episode yesterday and there was James Earl Jones. And I literally had to be like, is James Earl Jones still alive? And then I looked it up, and he's fucking 92.
Yeah.
He's still kicking. That's wild. Modern medicine, baby.
Hell yeah.
Oh, okay. So, any final thoughts on Clue or anything Clue adjacent or any just bullshit that you want to share with the podcast?
Have you ever seen My Blue Heaven?
No, you've yelled at me about this before.
Okay, well, for my birthday, I want you to watch it. Okay. If at all possible, I want to do it just so that we can fucking talk about it. You can just be like, oh, I'm recording this and not. And just let me be like, oh, my God, this is my favorite movie because.
Colleen Camp's in that.
Yeah, that's what made me. That's what we were talking about last night. Yeah.
Oh, you know what's streaming free on Tubi right now? Best Little Whorehouse in Texas.
Oh, wow.
Really?
Yes, and I am, because it's one of the curses of the podcast, too. I've wanted to do it a million times, but it keeps disappearing. I think I own it on DVD, but Mom, I'm so close to convincing Mom to do it. I want Mom to be on the podcast to do that movie, because A, it's a perfect movie for this podcast, and B, Mom doesn't like musicals, doesn't like country music. Love is Best Little Whorehouse in Texas.
Isn't that weird?
It's the weirdest fucking thing in the world, and I need to unpack it. I need to sit down and unpack it and record the conversation.
She's probably horny for Bert. I bet that's what it is.
She's like, I just think it's funny. I'm like, great, just talk to me about it. It'd be an interesting episode. I don't know what I'm going to do the next couple weeks, y'all. I know no one listens to the show, no one cares, but I care. And like, next weekend, Julie is going to be in New York. She's going to see Phantom of the Opera before it closes. And then the weekend after that, I'm going to be in Ohio for throwing a baby shower for Julie and Heather. So I'm like, when am I going to? I might have to hit Lacey up again for like the third week in a row.
What the hell you mean? You're going to be with everybody. Why can't you just record something Friday night? Even if it's just like drunk trivia or something.
Yeah, I'll probably end up doing that. Drunk trivia with the pregnant woman. Yeah, okay.
She can be the MC.
There you go.
And Julie can go crazy.
Oh, that's funny. I'm sitting here next to my, like, container full. I haven't opened any of the stuff I've gotten in the mail except for the gifts that I ordered. But, like, all the decorations and stuff for the party are still in their Amazon packages, just in this little crate. Like, I'm going to have to actually open it and, like, do inventory.
Yes, because I do that shit, and then sometimes you wait too late and you didn't get what you thought you did, or something's missing. So be sure you look.
Yeah. It's going to be a wild couple weeks. I'm going to be busy, busy, busy. But thank you guys so much for joining me on this episode that is way past due. Thank you for all the listeners who have been patiently waiting for us to do this episode.
No problem.
Yeah.
And Sam will do something again soon with you where you can actually get to speak.
Just let me know.
Yeah. Sometime this, I put it on your calendars, folks. Sometime this Halloween, around Halloween, we're going to do a big special episode about Rocky Horror. And it's going to be about the movie, and it's going to be about the play, because I think I'm going to make Mom watch both. Because the local theater company that I like to see, NRACT in Raleigh, they're doing Rocky Horror Show.
Oh.
And I'm like, oh, that'd be so great to, like, because the theater that used to do the shadow casts around here closed down. So no one does shadow casts around here anymore. So I can't take Mom to that. But I could take Mom to the live show and make her watch the movie. Because she doesn't necessarily have to be in the episode with us, but I would just want to be able to regale you guys with the experience of making Mom watch the movie.
Making Mom
most
watch it.
Definitely.
Yeah. So put that on your calendar.
Do you remember what I said the first time I watched it?
I do. We got done watching it. You're like, I need to take a shower. The first time you watched it was with Hillary, me, and Corey Rush.
Corey Rush.
Aww. That was the first time you watched it?
Yeah, I'd never seen it. I was actually kind of freaked out that Sam was into it so much. And then I just, because I just, when I think, the only thing I ever really knew about it was, like, how super sexy Tim Curry was in it. And I thought, okay, well, if my husband feels that way, too, we are in trouble. Like, mad trouble.
Fortunately, there's, like, boobies and stuff in the movie, too. It kind of.
Oh, I didn't notice.
That's so funny. So, yes, this fall, that's going to happen. When it can happen.
Nice.
So, thank you all for listening. If you go look in the episode description, you will find our support page where you can help the pod with a one-time donation, or you can sign up for a monthly patronage. You can also help the podcast just by recommending our show to your friends and sharing our links on social media. Come back and see us in the next episode. Thank you again to Sam and Lacey for joining me.
No problem.
See.
And until next time, we are the Weirdos, Mister. Thank you.